to resemble big, jagged chunks of ice. Down! Commanded Thaddeus. I flung myself to the floor-stroke wall, just as a solid mass of impacted snow the size of a brick chimney whooshed past, brushing the few remaining straggly hairs on my head. I tried to look up again, caught a glimpse of more incoming missiles, and quickly flattened myself back down. Avalanche? I guessed aloud. That didn't seem right. It was too localized and too vindictive.
Fear not, said Thaddeus, crouching a few feet away. The missiles of the Dark Ones will not impede our quest.
How do you figure that?
Our path is one of righteousness. It is the will of the Lord that our wretched bodies of filth and dirt be destroyed, and...
His point was immediately illustrated when a particularly large slab of ice struck him right in the face, tearing him from the wall like a poster for something the world no longer liked. The moment both his crampons came away from the rock, plain old regular boring gravity returned for him, and he plunged backwards out of sight. I gritted my teeth and continued climbing, crawling on all fours, hugging the wall like a child at his mother's thigh. The tactic served me pretty well, and being so thin probably didn't hurt. The big chunks of ice kept shooting past just behind me, upsetting nothing more than the label on the back of my collar. Looking up, I saw a narrow ledge that seemed to be sheltering me from the bombardment. Unfortunately, it was also blocking my view. I leaned back to try and get a better look, whereupon a slab of ice slammed into my shoulder. Fortunately, it was a brittle chunk that shattered wetly on impact, but it took me by surprise. My hands came away from the wall, and I was pushed back onto my feet and into full exposure. Another chunk clipped my waist, and one of my feet came free, leaving me splayed with three limbs in the air, connected to the wall with a single crampon. Another cluster was coming right for me. Panic seized my brain like the fist of a farmer's wife around a chicken's throat. My hand shot out reflexively, Arcanus Inferus Telecus! And I sent off a firebolt. It only deflected one of the missiles, but the force of the blast pushed me back until I was against the wall again, crab-walking upside down. The rest of the ice fell past, harmlessly, doing nothing worse than embedding a few jagged chips into my kneecaps. I didn't wait for my heart to ooze sluggishly back into place. Once the current storm of ice had passed, I pushed back on the wall as hard as I could, swung my body up and over, slammed heavily onto my face, then scuttled on all fours under the overhang, like a cockroach fleeing for the shadows. No more ice seemed to be falling. All was still, still in this case being an extremely relative term, given that it was still as windy as hell and the snow was piling up in my ear holes. And the assault seemed to be temporarily over. I carefully placed my hands around the ledge. With the crampons, it was like preparing to vault over a short wall, and pulled myself up. A butterfly knife slammed down into my left hand, pinning it to the rock. My crampons detached with the surprise. Normal gravity was restored, and I was dangling by my arms from the highest mountain in the world.
Or if the ice doesn't work, we could just wait for him to climb up here and stab him up, said Mr. Wonderful, standing over me and twirling a knife in each hand. An orange temperature-regulating aura shimmered closely around his body, and he was wearing a glass breathing mask hooked up to a leather gas bag on his back, which could only just contain his omnipresent grin. He didn't have enchanted crampons, so he tied a butterfly knife to each of his ankles, one of which was now pinning my hand to the rock.
"What are you doing here?" I yelled.
"We're a little bit upset with you, Jimbo. We give you a lovely, thoughtful gift of a tracking reetle, and then you leave it on a dead tosspot at the bottom of a mountain. That's the sort of thing we might take personally.
I'd forgotten to tell Slippery John to get rid of the Reetle. I had only myself to blame, but I blamed him as well for good measure. Mr. Wonderful's use of the word "we" gave me cause to look behind him. Baug was there, too. He was wearing the same breathing equipment, as well as enchanted crampons, so presumably Mr. Wonderful had just preferred to challenge himself.
"So, my little mountain goat," said Mr. Wonderful, playfully rocking his foot back and forth to twist the knife, "will you be coming quietly, or will we have to scrape you off the jagged rocks at the bottom?"
"Why?" I yelled. Mr. Wonderful idly tapped his foot, further mangling the bone and muscle of my hand.
"Well, that's quite an existential question, isn't it, Jimbo?"
"Do you know what's at the top of this mountain?" I yelled. I had no idea where I was going with this line of conversation, but my usually reliable animal instincts had started it, so I was running with it.
"What do we look like, geologists?" said Mr. Wonderful, irritably.
"Why do you think no one's ever climbed to the top? Even with aura spells and magic crampons," I continued. "This is where they're hiding it, the centre of the infusion."
"Oh, give it a rest," said Mr. Wonderful, but he seemed to be thinking about it.
"We are prepared to reiterate your options," said Baug quickly. "The opportunity to surrender yourself for transportation back to Lowlead and research is still available."
I tried shifting my grip. Pointless. Even disregarding the knife, the cold was seizing my hands up again. I could just about wiggle the fingers of my unstabbed one. I turned to my animal instincts again, but they shrugged, out of ideas. I was going to have to come up with an actual solution.
"Okay," I said, with difficulty. "No sweat." "You will be dissected and interrogated at exhaustive length," clarified Baug, apparently confused by my answer.
"In for a silver piece, in for a gold, that's what my dad used to say. Just one little thing."
"State it."
"Telecus," I finished, putting all the effort I had left into the finger waggles. A jet of flame shot across the ledge, rather small and weak, but enough to set Mr. Wonderful's turnips on fire. He reacted with a yelp and a reflexive hop, pulling the knife out of my hand. The only thing that was reliably anchoring me to the ledge was gone. I concentrated as hard as I could, trying to force my hands closed, to no avail. The cold had taken me right back to those first few uncoordinated hours of undeath, an alien in my own body. I fell. The ledge and the angry faces of Baug and Mr. Wonderful slipped away. The mountain wall rolled upwards like a high-speed conveyor belt. Time slowed again, snowflakes holding in the air like glittering diamonds on a sheet of black velvet. The extra thinking time helped me remember that I was wearing magical crampons, and all I had to do was touch them to the wall. I waved my arms to move closer to the mountain, somersaulting in the air, and kicked my toes into the rock as hard as I could. Had I actually paid attention in science class, rather than spending every lesson drawing breasts and flicking elastic bands at Frobisher, I might have been more familiar with the effects of sudden deceleration. Time slowed down yet again, just to give me the chance to fully take in the visceral sight of the crampons staying on the wall while the rest of me kept right on going, leaving behind a torn cloth boot and a dog-eared wooden leg. I fell. Again. Something that felt suspiciously like the ground slammed into my side, pulverizing all my remaining internal organs. I bounced several feet back upwards, then hung in mid-air. When I didn't come back down, I realized that my body hadn't come with me. The grim, empty, grey-tinted afterlife might have been a little disheartening, but I was beginning to seriously miss it. Between the snowstorm, the constant flickering, and the chittering of the tiny deleters scuttling across my spirit body, this particular visit to the dead world felt like being trapped in a crowded nightclub during a volcanic eruption. Through the disorienting madness of sound and visuals, I could only barely see where my body was. It was lying in an ugly pile on yet another icy ledge. I'd been fortunate. I hadn't fallen as far as I'd thought, and was still a good distance above the clouds, insofar as such a distance could be described as good. As I waited to return to my body, I noticed movement on the mountain wall above me. Even through the chaos, I recognized the insectile scuttling of Mr. Wonderful and the stoic gait of Baug. Then came a truly unprecedented experience for me. The burning desire to stop being dead and get back into my body as soon as possible. I could see the red-tinted forms of the two assassins as they stood over my form, and Mr. Wonderful, hands on hips, kicked at my body with a shoe knife. It seemed like my resurrection was maliciously taking its time for once. I could feel myself starting to be pulled back, but Mr. Wonderful was already rolling my body towards the edge. I tried to yell, but I was unheard by the living world, and the usual cluster of supervising deleters were no help at all. Just as one of my body's legs swung out into thin air, something bright and fast streaked past me like a comet, trailing white sparks. Baug and Wonderful looked up, as did I, just in time for a glowing ball of light to explode into sparks directly under their feet. They both leapt out of the way, badly misjudged the width of their platform, and dropped straight off the mountain. Then my soul surged back into my body. I opened my eyes to find myself on my back, half on and half off the ledge. I swiftly dragged myself into a firmer position. Thaddeus scuttled into view. He was attached to the wall with the crampons, and the force of the blast had pushed him down onto his back.
"See how the Dark Ones flee from the light," he announced. "They are like the cockroaches in the festering outside toilet of the damned."
"Was it you casting those spells?" I asked.
"The light of the Lord fills my rotten soul and unwashed hands," he said, which I took to mean yes.
"You haven't got any hands." This raised another question. How did you wiggle your fingers to cast the spell?
"The light comes from within, not the machinations of my digits," he said,
although I did notice that he'd taken his shoes and socks off. It must have been difficult to put the crampons back on afterwards, especially with no arms.
"Idle no longer. We must proceed."
I attempted to, but stopped halfway. The entire left side of my body rattled around like a limp bag of firewood. I couldn't move my hand or bend my elbow. The fall had shattered most of the bones in my arm like the dry sticks they were. "My arm's paralyzed," I muttered. "I lost my wooden leg, too. There'll be no fixing this without Merrill."
"Cease your whining. Behold!"
He kicked a crampon off one of his bare feet.
"Only one foot is required to ascend to heaven."
I attached it to my one remaining foot and tucked my useless arm into my belt. Between the two, I could pretty much write off the entire left side of my body, appendage-wise. I touched the crampon gingerly to the wall and instantly shifted from sitting on a ledge with my foot in the air to awkwardly half-crouching on the vast horizontal plain of Mount Murdercruel. We resumed the climb. With only one crampon each, we had to continue on all fours. I was having to do a quick little bunny hop with each step, attempting to get the crampon back onto the wall before gravity could have a chance to react. Thaddeus didn't seem to be having any trouble, though. "Hey," I said, as he tore off ahead. "I've only got one arm in commission, remember?" I felt stupid about it immediately. He didn't say anything, but he gave me a piercing look that said I had absolutely no right to complain. Without arms, he was having to flop forward like a newborn baby seal with brain damage, banging his face against the rock with each step. And he was making rather alarming pace, too. I was having to hop flat out just to keep up. "Hey," I called, to change the subject, "what exactly was that spell?"
"The level 47 cunning argument," he said proudly, "for rapid conversion of heathens."
"Have you always been able to do that?"
"'Tis a standard teaching in my order."
"Never seen you do anything like that before."
"Before I had no inspiration. Now my purpose is clear."
I watched him slither and flail his way up the wall with quiet dignity. It occurred to me that I'd never bothered to find anything out about Thaddeus's order. They could have been anything from gentle vicars to unstoppable warrior monks, although I suddenly had good reason to doubt the first one. It also occurred to me that I didn't know precisely how advanced a priest he had been. Considering that merely being undead had upped my battle mage level by several increments, he was probably quite formidable now. All in all, it made me grateful once again that his energies were being focused away from me at last. Rip both his arms off, why hadn't I thought of that? We climbed in silence for I don't know how long. Once I had settled into a routine of crawling and hopping, and when I was satisfied that Mr. Wonderful wasn't going to show up again any time soon, it was easy to fall into a reverie. With the regular movements of my untiring limbs, it was like being rocked to sleep by a huge stone nanny. Then the wind stopped. It hadn't simply died down. As we passed some unmarked line, it simply popped abruptly out of existence. Once you've gotten used to constant discomfort, its sudden cessation is like suddenly getting all your skin torn off. Surprised, I stopped. I could still hear its whistling roar coming from below us, but it was like it was on the other side of a wall. I looked around. Then I noticed the sky, and jolted with surprise a second time. "What happened to the stars?" I said. Thaddeus also stopped and stared. The sky was featureless black, not the mundane blackness that comes from the absence of light, but the same inky, infinite blackness I'd witnessed under the ocean. Light there was plenty of. It emanated from below, and was casting our shadows up the unyielding rock of Mount Murdercruel, whose forbidding blackness now seemed quite mediocre by comparison. With the latest in a long line of sinking feelings, I looked down. The world was a glittering sphere far below us, an ocean of clouds broken up by the occasional island of land or sea, and stretching out over it, below us now, was a layer of stars. A thousand two-dimensional circles of bright light surrounded the planet like spotted gift wrap. "They're just lights," I said. "They're just a bunch of lights in the sky."
"What did you think they were?"
"I thought they were stars." I waved my working arm, grasping for words. "You know, other balls of gas like our sun, going out into space forever. Other worlds, other life." He gave me a rather condescending look and continued the climb.
"Our planet is the center of the universe," he said. "That is what the Lord has always taught us."
"But there isn't any universe." I jerked my head upwards. "Not any more. It's just black." Ahead of us, the sky was still empty and silent. Behind us, the world was getting on with the complicated business of existing, a patchwork quilt of cloud, ocean, and land. I took one last look over the continents, and fancied that if I squinted I could just make out one of Barry's armies sweeping across another unwitting nation. Then I heard a new noise, a rapid series of regular chinks, like spikes sticking in and out of rock. I looked down between my legs and saw two figures, one skinny, one stout, scrambling their way up towards us. "Oh, give me a break!" I spat, before redoubling my efforts. I crawled and hopped as fast as I could manage, flinging myself at the wall again and again.
"What's the hurry? What's the hurry?"
yelled Mr. Wonderful, like a demented mantra. I didn't know how much longer my body could keep up this pace. Scraps of flesh flew off my arms each time they slapped against the wall, and some foul liquid was dripping from my nose hole. And I still didn't seem to be going fast enough. The rattling of his knives was getting louder and louder, and now that there was no other sound, it was like the rattling of a stick inside a Knoll's feed bucket. The sound seemed to be coming from all around me. I was expecting at any moment a butterfly knife to appear between my legs and smoothly slice me in half lengthways. Then I ran out of mountain. I'd been going fast enough that I kept going for a few feet, but then the crampon came away from the rock, my hand groped for something solid, and I fell forward onto a horizontal surface, a genuine one this time. "What happened?" was what I intended to say, but it came out more as,
"Our exodus is truly blessed,"
said Thaddeus, already on his feet and bouncing excitedly.
"We have reached the summit of the world."
We stood on the edge of a glass-smooth plain. It was like some staggeringly powerful device had cleanly sheared off the mountain from this point upwards, creating a tree stump a mile wide. Originally the peak had probably been much, much higher, as terrifying a thought as that was. As I looked around, I realized the plain wasn't as empty as I'd initially thought. There was something in the middle.
"You can't escape the wheels of justice, my little jaywalkers," came Mr. Wonderful's voice.
His grin appeared over the edge, followed by the rest of him.
"Now then, let's..."
He flinched hugely.
"Crack my knackers, what the hell is that?"
"I think it's the Nexus," I said. This seemed like a pretty safe bet. Even if a human had previously been able to get a team of workmen all the way up here, they'd probably have built something with slightly more traditional architecture than a featureless cube sitting in the dead center of the cross-sectioned mountain. A normal construction team would additionally have been hard-pressed to build it out of a single piece of milky white stone that glowed brightly from within, and wouldn't have been able to set up the glowing pillar of light that stretched eternally upwards from the top of the cube.
"Huh,"
said Mr. Wonderful, already bored. He took two smart steps forward and grabbed both Thaddeus and me around our throats.
"Well, for the top of the world, it's not much to look at, is it? This really what you climbed all this way to see?"
He giggled mockingly.
"Want to take some pictures before I throw you off?"
"Unhand us, black devil,"
spat Thaddeus.
"Only the Lord may leave his finger marks on the sullied flesh of his design."
"It's the Nexus," I yelled. "Don't you understand?" "No, I don't understand,"
said Mr. Wonderful cheerfully, dragging us inexorably back towards the edge.
"I prefer to keep it that way. Understanding gets in the way of the violence."
"It's what we're looking for. It's the center of the whole infusion, where the deleters come from."
"Oh, really?"
droned Mr. Wonderful disinterestedly. Then some kind of thought penetrated the mad bastard's head, and he said it a second time, less dismissively.
"Mr. Wonderful," said Baug, "your motion towards the mountain edge appears to have stalled. The execution of our assignment cannot be concluded without prompt reassumption of movement on your part."
Baug's voice snapped Mr. Wonderful out of his contemplation, and he resumed dragging us along.
"Not like it matters," he said agreeably. "You wouldn't know what to do with a nexus, even if you had one."
He reached the edge and swung around, dangling me over the abyss. My foot groped desperately for the edge, and I clung as hard as I could to his arm as he attempted to shake me off like a piece of snot on his finger.
"But we do know what to do! We're on a mission from God!"
"Oh, that's a new one."
He jiggled Thaddeus like an armful of puppy.
"How much have you been talking to this chap?"
"I mean the real one! He told us how to end the infusion! How do you think we got teleported here? We can't do that kind of magic!"
I was babbling now.
"Your punishment will be afforded greater dignity if you undergo it in silence," said Baug. "Your attempts to reason with Mr. Wonderful are futile, as he is a psychopath, and consequently utterly irrational."
"My little friend's right, you know," said Mr. Wonderful conspiratorially to Thaddeus. "You can't rely on psychopaths. They're totally unpredictable."
Everyone present saw it coming just a little too late to react. Mr. Wonderful suddenly spun around, flailing my and Thaddeus's legs like a fairground ride. My foot collided soundly with the side of Baug's head. The dwarf's expression didn't change. He tottered dizzily for a second as gravity debated what to do with him. Then Mr. Wonderful helped it make up its mind by hurling two knives, which lodged themselves either side of Baug's nose.
"Oh," Baug said. "Shit."
Then he fell.
"Been on that little twat's leash for years," said Mr. Wonderful, watching him disappear from sight. "The obedient pit bull becomes the escaped tiger, and it's got a knife."
He twirled another blade and made a vaguely predatory roaring noise, then smartly reached out and grabbed me by the lapel. I said, wondering if we hadn't made a gigantic mistake.
"Swear to me," he said, nose to nose hole with me. "Do you honestly know how to end the infusion?"
I didn't have the slightest idea, but the piercing, almost pleading look in his eye warned me against honesty. "Yes," I said.
"Right. Well, do me a favour and give it a few hours so I can get myself resurrected. I have to get back to the guild before he does, the little telltale gobshite."
He produced another butterfly knife from his seemingly limitless reserves, twirled it smartly three times, then buried it in his own eye socket. His skinny body folded up like a collapsing clothes rack.
"In the end,"
said Thaddeus, to fill the confused silence that followed,
"even he hath the goodness of the Lord in his heart."
"What are you talking about? He's a murdering psychotic bastard."
"In another time, such qualities could have sanctified him."
The closer we moved to the cube in the center of the plain, the more certain I was that we'd found what we were looking for. It had none of the decorations or filigree you might expect of an artifact of the gods, which probably meant that it was indeed genuinely important. Up close, the cube was smaller than it had seemed from the edge, just a few feet taller than me. If the deleters and their cosmic creators were inside, they wouldn't have a lot of elbow room. Its top face was emitting a broad column of light that stretched off into the black sky. I could hear a familiar high-pitched gibbering coming from within. We were probably the first sentient beings to gaze upon the Nexus. The occasion called for a memorable quote that would go down in history. "Well," I said, after some thought, "here we are."
"The Lord has guided us, and our pilgrimage is nearing an end."
"Yeah, I've been meaning to ask you something," I said, turning to him. "You do know we only have Dub's word for it that Simon is the false god, right?" We could just be swapping one all-powerful cosmic dipshit for another.
If you do not believe that the true Lord sanctions our quest, then why do you pursue it?
Me, I'm just here for a nice clean death, and Dub said he can give me one. I don't care who ends up running the world. I just want it to stop being my problem.
Those are the words of your tainted mouth, but are they truly the words of your soul?
Tell me, when you become religious, do you have to be taught how to use that smug, annoying know-it-all voice, or does it come naturally? 'Cause you should know, it really doesn't give any authority to the drivel you spout.
Worry not, he said,
my words sailing gaily over his head.
If Simon is the true Lord, he would never allow himself to be defeated by the actions of two unclean blasphemers such as us.
I stared into the depths of the cube. You know, you're really not being much of a comfort. I took a step towards the piercing whiteness and hesitated. Thaddeus took the opportunity to reactivate that same smug tone of voice I hate.
Perhaps now you ponder your true purpose?
No, I'm just looking for the bloody door. I did a complete circle around the cube. Seriously, how do you get in this thing? I attempted to run my good hand across the surface. It passed straight through and was swallowed by the white mass. It was an extraordinary feeling, like waving a hand over a volcanic vent that has somehow found a way to pump hot and cold air simultaneously. I could feel my arm being pushed upwards by a strong but gentle blast. I looked again at the great column of light that plunged infinitely into the void. This wasn't the Nexus itself. This was just the way in. The whiteness didn't seem to be damaging my hand, so I pushed my arm into the shoulder. As soon as it had hold of that much, the wind started sucking the rest of me in like spaghetti. I couldn't have pulled back even if I'd wanted to. I took a deep breath out of ingrained habit and let it take me. For a moment I saw nothing but the blinding whiteness. The incessant gibbering was deafeningly loud and coming from all around me. Meaningless images flickered past my vision. I felt an ethereal fist grab me by the waist and pull me upwards at incredible speed. The white disappeared with a wet pop, and the planet rocketed away from me, just as it had done during my first death. But this felt very different. There was no warmth or sensation of love. The world below me was still and silent, as if sulking off in despair. Then the whiteness returned, and everything went silent. The silence was soon replaced by a continuous rattling, like the chirruping of mechanical crickets. When my vision cleared, I found myself standing in... I didn't have anything to compare it to. I had been expecting some heavenly plane of existence, maybe with classical gold pillars and naked seraphim. But it was just a big room, totally unfamiliar except for its soul-crushing mundanity. Under my feet was a sickly grey carpet that was as thick and soft as a piece of greaseproof paper. The walls were painted a light institutional blue. The ceiling was missing, opening out into a featureless white void. The only decoration on the walls was a sign reading, "Loincloth QA Department," with a smaller sign underneath reading, "Abandon hope, all ye who enter." The bulk of the room was taken up by what I at first thought was some kind of labyrinth, but the walls were made of some flimsy fabric-covered material and were only about 5 feet high. I was still looking around when we heard a voice, barely audible over the ongoing rattling noise. I couldn't make out the words, but I recognized the cheerful, high-pitched tone. "Merrill," I said.
"We must regroup with our fellow maggot of creation's fruit basket," announced Thaddeus. She will join our righteous quest for extinction.
I stood on tiptoe to see over the walls, then inhaled sharply and ducked back down. A huge number of heads, presumably with bodies attached, were scattered throughout the room, poking up from between the walls. I slowly rose up again, expecting to see alerted guards training crossbows at my eyeballs, but the heads hadn't moved. Statues? I wondered aloud.
For what purpose would the gods possess graven images? Said Thaddeus.
I spotted two doors on opposite walls of the room. A glowing light was coming from behind one of them, outlining the cracks. The other was slightly ajar, and seemed to be where Merrill's voice was coming from. I began making my way towards it through the bizarre maze. As we navigated through the walls, we discovered that they divided the floor space into a number of square sections. Each contained a chair and a desk, but unlike any I'd ever seen. The furniture makers I knew liked to think of themselves as craftsmen, carving so many swirly patterns and bunches of grapes that there was barely room for the drawers. These desks were just soulless, unadorned steel rectangles. We turned a corner and almost ran straight into Captain Scar. She was pale and motionless, all rambunctious energy gone. She was standing bolt upright in the middle of the floor, feet tightly together, arms held out at her sides, eyes widened in surprise, and focused intently on a section of wall. She looked like a drama student who had been told to be a tree, then never told to stop. And she wasn't the only one. As we made our way across the strange room, we saw them everywhere. People standing frozen in place with their arms held out. I saw the woman I'd met at the entrance of Yawnbore, now relieved of her hedge clippers. There was the father from the hotel who had almost slammed a window onto my fingers. All the afflicted townspeople were there, each wearing the same frozen expression of shock. They weren't laid out with any apparent order or care, but randomly scattered throughout the room, as if they'd just been left where they'd been dumped. It was like a storage room for mannequins. "Storage room," I repeated aloud, waving my hand in front of the face of a little girl I'd last seen punching a dog. "This is where they took them. All the people from Yawnbore they needed to get rid of. It's some kind of prison or quarantine."
"This brings us no closer to our just reward," said Thaddeus gruffly.
I nodded. We left the prisoners behind and continued towards the door. As we approached, I heard the sound of another voice drift through the crack.
"How about now?"
said the new voice. It was flat and expressionless in the classic syndrome style, but was also incredibly deep and booming and loud enough to vibrate the floor beneath our feet, the voice of a bored messiah.
"No, pretty sure I'm still undead."
Merrill sounded cheerfully apologetic. I opened the door a little wider and put my eye to the gap. Beyond was a circular chamber, virtually empty but for what looked like a dentist's chair in the centre. Merrill was seated in it. She seemed quite comfortable and was beaming happily. She was also missing all of her arms and legs.
"Okay, let's just run through this from the top," said the other voice.
It seemed to be coming from the same source as an incredibly bright light that was shining down on Merrill from above.
"Essentially, you're an undead minion, right? But those are supposed to just be temporary help for necromancer characters. A zombie gets spawned out of the ground and turns to dust after a few attacks. That's how it works. I'm thinking the guy who raised you used that spell as a basis and did something wacky with it. What do you think?"
"For a god, you're not very all-knowing," said Merrill, without malice.
"Shut up. You will show respect to the mighty Simon. The mighty Simon's gonna have another look through some of your code. If I don't figure this out by lunchtime, I'm just gonna delete you, all right?"
"Fair enough." The light faded. Merrill began softly humming to herself. There probably wasn't going to be a better opportunity. I slowly pushed the door all the way open, dropped into an alert crouch, and crept silently towards the chair.
"Hi, Jim!" called Merrill,
rendering moot my attempt at stealth.
"Hi, Thaddeus!"
Thaddeus nodded his head infinitesimally in greeting, while I examined Merrill's predicament. She wasn't strapped in, but in her current state she couldn't do more than wriggle, and anyway, she wasn't acting like there was anywhere she'd rather be.
"What happened to your arm and your foot?" she asked.
I was actually going to ask you something along the same lines." She looked down and clicked her tongue, as if I'd merely drawn her attention to a patch of dead grass on her lawn.
"Oh, yeah. Deleted, I'm afraid. Don't worry about it."
"Well, it's going to make it hard to get you out of here." She smiled patronizingly.
"Jim, just stop it. It doesn't matter. You don't have to play the hero anymore."
"I am not playing the sodding!" Thaddeus kicked me sharply in the back of the knee and planted his chin on my shoulder as I stumbled.
"Discretion is a most practical virtue," he hissed.
"Simon's been holding me here, being weird and saying a lot of things that don't mean anything," said Merrill. "I think he's trying to figure out how our whole undead thing works, but between you and me, I don't think he has any idea what he's doing."
"Truly he is the false god," muttered Thaddeus, solemnly relieved.
"But he's going to delete me now," she continued.
She gazed up into the whiteness, smiling wistfully.
"Soon it'll all be over."
"You don't need to get deleted." Merrill blinked at me. Her eyes were slightly unfocused, and her usual enthusiasm was severely dampened. If she had been human, I'd say she'd been drugged, but I knew that our blood didn't ooze fast enough for chemicals to have any effect.
"I'm glad I got to see you one more time, Jim," she said, still gazing into the sky. "There's something I've been trying to tell you for some time now."
"What?"
"I lied. There never was a revolution in Beauregard."
"Yeah, I know."
"You do?"
"Of course I do. It was bloody obvious."
"Oh. Well, anyway, you were right all along. The spirit of Beauregard is gone, and there's no room for the pride of our people any more. That's why I came back to Yawnbore, to find you, so I could join your quest and get myself deleted as well."
I was suddenly extremely angry, and the more I wondered why, the more angry I became. "For God's sake, Merrill, you don't have to!"
"Jim, it's okay. This is what I want. There's something else. I've learned the truth."
"The truth?"
"No, the truth. The one Barry's followers were spreading around back in Lowlead. The one that makes some people calm and some people crazy. Simon told it to me, and I just don't really care any more."
"I care," I heard myself say. To my surprise, I meant it.
"Then you'd better run, quick," she said, jerking her head upwards. "Simon's coming back."
Above us, a section of the whiteness was somehow becoming slightly whiter and more brilliant than the mundane whiteness around it.
"We must go,"
announced Thaddeus, pointedly kicking me in the shin. I swiftly went back through the door before Simon could catch me. But when Thaddeus tactfully closed the door after we were through, pulling the handle with his teeth, I didn't move. The Great Simon confesses to not being able to get his head around it, came that booming voice again. That little freak Dub can't notify his code to save his life. You got any idea what base regen PM is? Answer your mighty god.
Can't say I do, sir.
Thaddeus was biting at my arm, trying to pull me away. I shook him off, pushed the door barely ajar, and peered through the crack. Merrill's body was surrounded by a strange green aura, and a tendril of energy extended from it into the sky. "Well, whatever," said Simon, "was kind of hoping I could figure this bug out, but out of sight, out of mind, I think."
"Good luck with everything," she said quickly. Her eyes met mine.
Then he deleted her. I would have thought it deserved a little more ceremony, but the process was terribly abrupt. Everything inside the green aura simply faded into shadow. Then both the shadow and the aura disappeared. Within 2 seconds, nothing remained of Merrill. I kept watching from the crack in the door, even after she'd gone, and after Simon's glorious light had retreated. I remained frozen, staring at the chair where she had been. Eventually I felt myself topple slowly backwards until I fell onto my backside. I looked up at Thaddeus. "What was that?" I said. He thought for a moment.
"The righteous judgment of Simon."
"This isn't the way it's supposed to go," I yelled, suddenly getting to my feet. "I was supposed to rescue her. She let herself get taken because she thought I'd rescue her and we'd defeat the villain, run down the mountain as his doom fortress collapses around us." I stopped when I saw Thaddeus leaning away from me. His arm stumps were twitching, and his expression was about 2 parts fear to 1 part contempt. "It just doesn't make any sense," I finished weakly.
"Our sister has found the annihilation our kind deserve," he said tentatively. "Rejoice in that."
"But she didn't want to be deleted."
"It was her choice, just as it is our choice."
"Her choices are stupid. Every choice she makes is stupid." Thaddeus looked at me through his eyebrows.
"But who are you to decide another's fate?"
"Yes," said a new voice. "That's my job." We slowly turned around, as if we were mounted on cake stands. "If you're going to have a shouting argument while on a heretical mission," said Barry, "don't do it right outside God's door. Are you completely stupid?" He seemed a little out of his element. His brilliant white aura and constant levitation were a lot more suited to, say, the scene of an epic battle, or the summit of a mountain top in the middle of a thunderstorm, but this place was a little too cramped for the full effect. Which is not to say that his sudden appearance didn't make me come close to wetting myself. The incredible glare that was Simon's celestial form was suddenly overhead. "What are you two doing here?" he boomed. "Barry, did you bring them in at last?"
"Simon!"
barked Thaddeus, his voice so authoritative that even Barry flinched.
"If you are the true Lord, then prove yourself worthy of our faith. Delete us!"
"How dare you test the Lord!" shrieked Barry. "He's the one who's supposed to test you!" "Delete you?" repeated Simon. "Are you serious?"
"Our existence is a blight," continued Thaddeus. "If you are truly our creator, then uncreate us now."
"Wait. you actually want to be deleted. Both of you. I'd tried to keep out of the conversation because it was by far and away the most insane one I'd ever encountered. I stalled. Yes, yes, that would be very nice, if you would. Lord, Barry broke in, if it pleases your majesty, I would be deeply grateful if you would let me deal with this. What? Simon was getting more and more confused. No, don't be stupid. I'll just take care of it right now. Thaddeus and I tensed up in anticipation. Nothing happened. Lord? Asked Barry as the silence dragged on. Oh, shit, Brub, said Simon. The light disappeared. Brub, I said, after a moment. Simon has spoken, said Barry, obviously improvising. Clearly his wish is for me to finish you off. He cracked his knuckles.
He could not uncreate us, said Thaddeus grimly. Do you see now? You are the consort of a false god.
A single drop of black blood squirted menacingly from one of his stumps. Oh, okay, I guess this is going to be a figment of my imagination, then. He extended a hand. Somewhere in the distance, a heavenly choir burst into song. White energy, edged with gold, exploded from his palm. I could feel the heat radiating from all around. The smell of burning carpet assaulted my nose hole. But after a moment's terror, I realized that my body was very pointedly failing to be boiled away by relentless holy magic. The spell cleared. A confused Barry was visible again. Thaddeus was standing in front of me, extending one of his bare feet and wiggling his toes. A bubble of semi-transparent golden light surrounded us. Began Barry.
Only a false god would leave a lickspittle such as thee to fight his battles on his behalf, intoned Thaddeus as the shield faded.
Barry bared his teeth. I am not a lickspittle! He extended his hand for another bolt. Thaddeus responded by nimbly hopping onto his other foot and rattling off a stream of lightning-fast holy words. A glowing white level 47 cunning argument exploded against Barry, slamming him against a partition wall. The vicar's levitation spell fizzled out, and he fell back onto his arse, clutching his arm as smoke rose from the folds in his sleeve. A very worried frown broke out on his face as he remembered what vulnerability felt like. "Who the hell are you?"
"I am Father Thaddeus, praise his name, God-botherer the Third," said Thaddeus, drawing himself up and giving Barry the full flare of his nostrils. "High priest of the Seventh-day Advent-hedge devolutionists. Keeper of the incantations, and steward of the Sunday coffee mornings."
"Holy balls," said Barry unpiously. "I did my thesis on you."
"We are in the employ of Dub Us, the true god," continued Thaddeus. "Surrender now, aid us in the downfall of Simon, and your soul may not yet be damned."
Barry glanced between Thaddeus and me. A drop of sweat ran down his nose. "Well," he said slowly, carefully moving his hands behind his back, "that's a kind offer. Dub Us certainly sounds like a benevolent god, but you're forgetting about... hang on... you're forgetting about this?" I saw the finger waggling but couldn't warn Thaddeus in time. Barry thrust out both his hands for one big push and gave it everything he had. Raw power blasted out of him like a high-pressure hose, pinning Thaddeus to the wall. I saw Thaddeus only just visible amid the light, backed up against the wall and holding up both his feet, putting every ounce of power into his shield. 10 seconds of joint-quivering effort passed, then 20, then 30. It was becoming an excruciating spectacle. The paint on the wall behind Thaddeus was blackened, and the carpet had melted under his feet. Finally, the shield gave way, its layers peeling apart like an onion. Thaddeus was engulfed in the searing white glow, and his body disappeared from sight. "Right then, one down," said Barry, when the effect faded. He leaned against the burnt wall, gasping for breath. Then he started with realization, and began looking around urgently. "Where'd the other one go?" The conflict had distracted him long enough for me to duck out of sight. Now I was desperately creeping on all fours, or as close as I could come with a missing foot and a paralyzed arm, toward the glowing door on the other side of the room. I heard a burst of choral singing and the clatter of furniture being violently rearranged. I cautiously poked my head over the divide and saw Barry with his back to me, shoulders hunched in fury, telekinetically picking through a newly created pile of ruined desks, partitions, and prisoners. I swiftly ducked back down and got back to creeping before he realized I was somewhere else. "I really think you're being irrational about this," he said, doing some kind of breathing exercise they probably teach you in anger management class. "Maybe you should stop and consider for a moment. I'm the most powerful holy magic user in the world, and if you somehow get past me, you'll be up against God. And you, you're nothing but a dried-out husk held together with string. I'd say you're out of your depth, but I think you already realize you hit the sea bed a long time ago." I kept crawling, moving as carefully as I could so that the exposed bone in my leg stump didn't thump on the thin carpet. If I'd just let him keep talking, maybe he'd smug himself to death. I heard another holy bolt and another crunch of broken wood and bones, closer this time. "You want to be deleted, right?" said Barry, levitating in the center of the room and rotating like a searchlight. "So why are you even hiding? I can do the same thing to you that I did to your friend. That's as good as deletion, isn't it?" "No," I replied, privately, because there would still be a body to come back to, even if it was little more than an angry cloud of dust gradually settling into the carpet to spend eternity counting the fibres. That had been Thaddeus's fate. An unfamiliar twinge of guilt pricked at me, which didn't make a lot of sense, because I definitely wasn't going to blame myself for what had happened to him. He should have rethought his rather confrontational approach to danger around the time his arms were being torn off. I stumbled. Crawling with one arm paralyzed and one foot missing had proved too difficult. I lost my balance, fell forward, and heard my stump knock loudly upon the partition wall. I lay on the ground, trying to keep perfectly still. Silently, my face buried in carpet, I began to pray. "Dabas," I thought, as clearly as I could, "if I'm doing all the legwork, the least you can do is pull a few strings on your end. Please make it so that he didn't hear that." A second passed. Another second passed. The third one was interrupted by the partition wall above me bursting outwards in a singing white fireball, followed by a brief shower of wooden fragments and body parts. I flattened myself down as well as I could, and wriggled out of the way. Dub Us's claim to one true god status was starting to look as shaky as Simon's. Barry was sending out more